Hey there, I'm Sandy Scarlatta, and welcome to the Happiness Solve podcast. Twice a week, we explore the journey to finding true happiness by sharing inspiring stories, practical tips, and insightful conversations with some of today's leading experts. But we don't just scratch the surface. We dive deep into the real grit of what it takes to live a genuinely happy life. Whether you're looking to improve your well-being, enhance your relationships, or simply add more joy to your life, you're in the right place. So grab your favorite beverage, get comfortable, and let's dive into today's episode. Because happiness is a choice, and the choice is yours. Hello, Michelle. How's it going today? So happy you're here and excited for this conversation.
Soda, for it is chilly this morning, so I'm grateful to be inside and be able to spend time with you this morning.
Yes, and I'm in Northern Virginia outside of DC, and we just got hit with the first snowstorm that we've had since before COVID. I have my perpetual pandemic puppy that I got in May of 2020, right? Because I knew I was never going to, you know, I was going to be staying home, working from home. I was like, I'm not going back to an office anytime soon. And so I got my little dog, and he doesn't like it. Like, he's seen snow, but we've only gotten like maybe an inch. Like, we've had no snow. And we only got about maybe 4 inches. He doesn't like it. It's so funny. We're having to clear space for him to go to the bathroom and like, come on, just do it. He's like, but it's the street. I don't want to go to the bathroom on this. I'm like, just go. It's okay. You're not on grass. It's okay.
I can relate. I just got a puppy a few months ago. He actually likes to, he kind of bounds, like he leaps in the snow. It's actually kind of funny. But then he gets really cold. So when you have to come inside, sweetheart, it's too cold. Your little paws. You know, so
I know.
Yes. Well, I hope the snow is not too dangerous for people out driving and for your sweet puppy gets used to it.
Unfortunately, little
things that you can buy in terms of putting on their feet, little slipper sorts of thing.
Right. Right. Well, unfortunately, we got some freezing rain last night. So there is some ice out there and it's not going to get above freezing for the next 5 days. So it could be a little treacherous. So yeah, we do have to be careful here.
Please be safe. And you're just not used to it. In Minnesota, we're used to putting ice and salt and all that stuff, you know, on the roads to kind of help deal with it. But in other places, they're not. So be safe.
No.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. Thanks for joining us, everyone, today. I have the pleasure, and I'm so grateful to be speaking with Michelle Sherman. You're a PhD, so you're actually Dr. Michelle Sherman, and Michelle is the co-author of "Loving Someone with a Mental Illness or History of Trauma," written with your mom, which was awesome. Exactly. And you're a licensed clinical psychologist who has dedicated your career to supporting families dealing with mental illness or trauma, PTSD, and you've worked in diverse settings, including the Veteran Affairs, healthcare system, private practice, and academia as a professor at the University of Oklahoma and University of Minnesota Medical Schools. Very, very impressive. I'm so excited to be speaking with you because trauma is something that everybody deals with. And the more I work with clients and work on my own, you know, peeling the layers away, which I've been working on for, as I was telling before we hit record, for over 35 years now, I'm realizing more and more that everything goes back to childhood trauma, right? Because we're little and we don't know and we don't understand and we don't, you know, even if it's something very simple as somebody stole your toy, right? That's traumatic for a child that's never dealt with it. So thank you for the work that you're doing, because I think more so now than ever, it's just perpetuating and it's just getting worse. And, you know, I was just, this interview, I was watching the Today Show, and today's the last week of Hoda being on the Today Show. She's retiring this Friday. But they just had a woman, last name is Beck, talking about anxiety and using creativity. And that's kind of where I feel like where we are, especially with the younger generation, is that anxiety is just becoming such a problem. It's even elevated more than that. What is your take on that? And why are we suddenly experiencing so much more trauma, PTSD, mental illness? It just seems to be so out of control.
Yeah. That's a really great reflection. The research is showing that rates are continuing to go up. And I, you know, we don't have a crystal ball to say exactly why. I think there are a number of factors. I certainly think that even compared to like when I grew up, when we grew up, there's a lot more trauma surrounding young people, be it from school shootings, be it from the dangers of what people experience in bullying and social media and all sorts of stuff. It's a different world with being surrounded by the 24/7 news cycle of trauma and bad news and things like that. And so we're surrounded by difficult, upsetting things. So I think just the environment is different. And I think there is greater acceptance now of people being open and talking about it. Not that there isn't still stigma, because of course we know that there is, but there has been some reduction in stigma attitudes or judgmental attitudes towards some mental illnesses, which I think brings people talking about it more, which I think is a positive thing to more acceptance. And you look at college campuses and they have many more outreach and support programs for students and things like that. And certainly places like NAMI and things like that, that has free support programs for loved ones and for people living with mental illness. So I think there's more acceptance in talking about it, which I think contributes to it. And we live in a challenging time, from climate sorts of things, political things, to violence, to war. We live in a time of a lot of stressors and difficulties. So it's a tough time. It's a tough time. And so I think people, a lot of people are struggling. The rates certainly show that. And not to be Pollyanna here, but there certainly are a lot more treatments, a lot more access than people are trying to provide services, be it from prevention to treatment to people who are struggling. So I think there is also reason to be hopeful.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's so many resources out there today. Podcasts, YouTube.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
you can sit for 27 hours a day, right? Just on YouTube, watching videos on how to manage anxiety and things like that. I mean, there's so much information out there. So that is a positive thing. It's just that so often people don't want to reach for help.
Right. Absolutely. And there are lots of reasons about that. And I just want to make one little comment about media that's out there. I think it is good. And more people sharing their story and things like that. I just need to express a little bit of personal anxiety about some of the misinformation that's also put out there. And some
Please
ways
do.
In which people are perhaps encouraged or given information, you know, like pro-eating disorder sort of things, or here's how you end your life by suicide. Some of that I think is also dangerous. And so
Of course, I
think that there's a lot of good for sure about all the information available, but there's also risks about that. I just wanted to put in my anxiety about that.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I did my first solo podcast that was released on January 1st. And I normally, you know, I've had this show for, this is my fifth year. I'm going into my fifth year. And I've never done solo interviews simply because I have over 400 people on a wait list.
Oh my God.
Like I get dozens and dozens of requests every single week.
Wow.
So if you're listening and I haven't responded, my apologies. It's just I can't possibly interview everybody all at once. And then, of course, I have to be kind of mix it up. And, you know, because, you think of how many books are published every single day where, you know,
absolutely,
10 requests a week are just people that are publishing books. And it's a great book. And it's not that I don't want to feature it. It's just this show isn't all about somebody's book, right? So you kind of have to be, but the thing is this solo podcast that I did last week was literally about that, the myths in personal development to watch out for, because, you know, you don't believe everything you see. There's not a one size fits all. You know, people are like, oh, just, you know, I've actually talked to people who have said, well, I don't have any negative thoughts. I've overcome that. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, really? Really? So you really, you're looking at me with a straight face telling me that you don't have any negative thoughts, because last I checked, we do not know how to eliminate the ego completely from our mind, and you're going to have negative thoughts and it's okay. So I did a whole, it was probably like a 10 minute podcast. So it's a short listen. If you haven't listened, folks, you know, go ahead. It's a short listen. And so I'm going to be continuing to do some of those, you know, very short, just, great. More, you know, look, just because I've got so much knowledge, I mean, from 35 years and I'm somebody that stays on top of it because I'm talking real time with people.
Right.
And you do have to take everything with a grain of salt.
Yeah, absolutely. And then look for their qualifications, their credentials, repeated themes you see, and then check it out if you're not sure. So I just wanted to put that plug in. But yeah, part of my real passion is, in addition to obviously serving people with mental illness, my whole career, frankly, has been focused on supporting those that love them. And that's including not only, you know, parents, partners, friends, et cetera, but also children who, honestly, Sandy, in my opinion, for so long, particularly in the United States of America, are really neglected by the system. And I have huge passion about this, actually. And I have been trying to contact and learn from other countries around the world, especially Canada, UK, Australia, who are so far ahead of the United States and offering programs yes. and things like that. But let's face it, you know, we're talking at the beginning of our discussion today about the increased risk of mental illness in general. Well, we know kids whose parents have a mental illness are at much higher risk due to nature and nurture. And so I'm really very energized and committed to trying to raise awareness about their experience. And let's face it, as opposed to other countries, we don't really have, I know of one, American Association for Caregiving in South Florida. That's the only really formal organization I know of in our whole country that supports kids. And that's not specific to mental illness. But I am hopeful that through discussions and conversations and advocacy, we continue to raise awareness of the needs of these young people and continue to develop and research early intervention programs to try to prevent them from having some of these longer-term difficulties, which is why we wrote a similar book for teens called I'm Not Alone, A Teen's Guide to a Parent, to Living with a Parent Who Has Mental Illness or PTSD, because there's a huge need supporting these teenagers as well.
Hey everyone, today I'm thrilled to share something truly special with you. Have you ever felt like you're just scratching the surface of your potential? Or maybe you're looking for ways to bring more balance and fulfillment into your life. If that resonates with you, then I have an event you won't want to miss. Introducing the Holistic Life Mastery event live and in person, November 7th through 9th at the beautiful La Quinta Hotel outside of Palm Springs, California. This isn't just another seminar. It's a transformative experience designed to help you unlock your full potential, cultivate a holistic approach to life, and achieve mastery in every area that matters to you. Imagine spending 2.5 days surrounded by like-minded individuals, all committed to personal growth and conscious living. You'll have the opportunity to learn from world-renowned speakers, engage in powerful workshops, and gain practical tools that you can apply immediately to your life. Plus, our keynote speaker is Emmy Award-winning producer, actor, and author of The Way of the Cobra, Sean Kanan. You may have seen him in the number one Netflix series, Cobra Kai. Whether you're looking to enhance your personal well-being, improve your professional skills, or find more joy and purpose, the Holistic Life Mastery event has something for everyone. Our speakers are leaders in their fields, covering topics from peak performance and mindfulness to business psychology to relationships. And the best part, this event is designed to cater to all aspects of your life. It's about creating holistic balance, mind, body, and spirit. You'll leave feeling inspired, empowered, and ready to take on the world with a renewed sense of purpose with a plan of action. So mark your calendars and join us for an unforgettable experience. You'll find the registration link in the show notes. Don't wait. Spaces are limited and filling up fast. Remember, this is your chance to invest in yourself and your future. The Holistic Life Mastery event is more than just a workshop. It's a stepping stone to the life you've always dreamed of.
So, and the weird thing is that 2 weeks before my 13th birthday, my 19-year-old brother, who was serving in the U.S. Army in Germany, we don't know the circumstances, if he either fell or was pushed out of a window, but had a very serious, the main artery in his heart was damaged. So he would never have survived. And he passed. You know, it was a very, very traumatic thing. And for me, you know, this was like right before my 13th birthday. And back then, nobody talked about it. We just didn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. I remember going back to school and not one person said anything to me. So while at the time it didn't seem unusual, but you can only imagine as a 13-year-old girl where nobody's acknowledging that I just had this super tragic loss and nobody said a thing. It was as if it didn't happen, right?
How tragic, just adding to your trauma, right?
Right. Yeah. And I was just taught to smile and everything will be okay, right? And while that does serve you in certain circumstances over the long haul, you can't just smile. And, you know, like if you have to go to a meeting, right, and do a presentation, it's you can put on that smile and give it your all, give it your go, right? But at some point you have to deal with it. And I didn't because I didn't know what I didn't know and I didn't have anybody to help me. So anyway, you know, that's just part of my story and, you know, is what it is. And I've overcome it. And, you know, but the thing is, you know, Steve Jobs said you connect the dots by looking backward, right? So fast forward to 2013, 2 weeks after my son's 13th birthday, we got the phone call that you never want to get. And that was that my ex-husband, my son's father, was driving drunk and was involved in an accident where two people were killed. He ended up going to prison for 7 years. So here I am dealing with my 13-year-old little boy. When he got off the phone with his father, he was on his hands and knees, you know, hitting the floor. And I'm standing there like, and I remember talking to my best friend and I was like, I don't know how to deal with this as a parent. How, you know, we don't get a manual anyway on how to raise a child. How do I raise a child? I'm in Loudoun County, Virginia, which is a very affluent county. It's like the most affluent county in the United States. And you don't have, nobody's kids were in jail, right? This wasn't inner city where sadly, you know, 3 out of 5 kids has a parent, one or both parents in prison. And it was just this, and my friend said to me, Sandy, you know, everything that you've done and all the personal development and all the books you've read and all the coaching and all the therapy has led you to this point. Now, I still didn't have all the resources, right? What do you do, right? But, you know, thankfully now my son is 24. He graduated from college. He's got a full-time job. He just moved into an apartment with his girlfriend. Like he's doing amazing. His father is now out of prison. They have an amazing relationship. Like everything is good, right? And he still hasn't dealt, he really hasn't dealt with the PTSD, but he does have severe generalized anxiety disorder, which I think a lot of these kids do, but he's doing well. And he knows that at some point he will manage this. Yeah. He's just not ready. And that's okay. You know, everybody has to do it in their time because I did send him to therapy. He just wasn't ready. But so back to full circle, you were talking about how the system sometimes fails. You know, I had him on, I tried to involve the school. They didn't really help so much. And it was really sad, you know, and we just had to, at the end of the day, it was the school secretary that helped my son the most. Because his college counselor, I mean, his high school guidance counselor told him not to bother applying to college because he wasn't going to get in. Oh, and my. She said, I don't even know if you're going to get into community college.
Oh, my. I got goosebumps.
And I didn't know. I thought he was being lazy. I didn't know the signs. And his anxiety really caused him to not be able to focus on his schoolwork. You know, at this point, we're talking a 14, 15-year-old kid who doesn't want to listen to his mom. You know, this was a lot of struggles for a lot of years. So anyway, long story short, she was like, what do you want out of a college? He goes, I just want a really good D1 football and basketball program because that's what I love.
Yeah.
He applied to 5 D1 colleges, got into all 5, went to University of Louisville, had a great experience, still, you know, goes back and goes to the games and it was an amazing experience. And so, you know, I think it really comes down to
that's awesome.
Right.
It's community, right? And it may not be someone
right
for their name or someone in that role. It could be the secretary. Love that story.
Yeah. And I had parents. I mean, one of my closest friends, you know, right after the accident, because, you know, we were living in 2 separate homes. And at that point, my son spent more time with his dad than he did with me because we knew that he was going to be leaving us for a while. And one of my best friends, every day she would take my son to the bus stop for my ex-husband. And you know what I mean? Like, it took a village and people stepped up and really helped. And it was amazing. But enough about me. I just wanted to share that because we were talking about how parents, you know, so today, what are some of the resources? Let's dive into that a little bit. And I'd like you to share, you know, some tips that parents can use when they're dealing with some sort of mental illness, trauma that your child has experienced, especially teens. You know, what are some things that parents can do to help so that their kid can graduate high school, go to college, have a normal, you know what I mean? And really be a, because what we want is we want our children to be contributing members of society. You want your child to have a job. You want your child to move out and be that contributing member of society.
Absolutely. Absolutely. First of all, I just want to say age 13 is jinxed in your family.
Right?
Oh my gosh. That's quite a coincidence, right? And so first of all, just emotionally kind of touched by your sharing. So thank you for sharing that. And obviously a story of resilience, you know, in both of you. Even in your own story, we could identify some resilience factors. But to more specifically answer your question, yeah, the research shows that most of us at some point in our life experience a traumatic event. Fortunately, most people don't develop PTSD or have long-term difficulties. Some do, obviously. And good news, of course, there are evidence-based treatments now to help people with PTSD. But let's just back up for a second. So lots of people experience trauma. Most people are resilient. What are some of the factors that help? Well, some of this is going to be like, well, of course, Michelle, this is obvious. But I've actually been reading some research recently showing that some of the factors I'm just going to describe right now, actually research has shown can actually prevent the development of depression and anxiety, which is actually pretty cool. So we're talking about people who perhaps have a family history or things like that. And so these are things that not only if you develop the illness can be helpful, but actually may be preventive factors, which I think is pretty powerful. And it's stuff that we all know. It's stuff like getting quality sleep, regularly moving your body. Regular, and I'm not saying, you know, doing marathons, but getting that endorphins kick going on, being careful about alcohol and drug use sort of stuff, healthy food, that sort of stuff. But the thing that I'd like to lean into a little bit more is the importance of community. And as you said, it can be the school secretary, it can be a friend, it can be a neighbor, it can be a soccer coach, it can be all sorts of different people. But I, in my opinion, so many people, certainly including young people, are missing that. You know, think about all the people through COVID who were homeschooled and all of the lacking of the opportunities for connection, belonging, and things like that. I think there are risks of people who homeschool unless they get their kids involved in other sort of activities and things like that. The real importance of community and connection. So what does the research show so clearly? That if young people have at least one person in their life that can kind of be looking out for them and supporting them, it makes a big difference. And so I think certainly involving supportive people, offering counseling, and yeah, it's not going to be helpful for everyone. It sounds like for your son, you encouraged it. It wasn't ready, but at least he knows that it was available. Right. And connecting with other people, particularly when there's a trauma in the family, because you said it was your ex-husband, certainly someone you probably still have some history with, at least. And so in addition to you, you were wise as a mom and we're going to get other people involved to help sort of stuff. So the healthy lifestyle behavior sort of stuff, the community being involved. At times, I actually am also a personal believer in finding ways of giving back to your community. So finding ways of volunteering, of supporting. Because for a lot of people, they talk about, oh my, yes, this was a really, really horrible thing that I have. And other people go through tough things too. And I can see other people in role models and resilience and things like that. So that spirit of hope that we're going to be able to get through difficult times, that other people are there with me and walking through it. I think these are all resilience factors that can really help all people, frankly, certainly including teenagers.
For sure. I just wrote down service. I want to share just very, very briefly, because we were talking about the stigma of mental health. And I am somebody who, while I've had my own share of traumas, I mean, lots of it, like not just like sometimes I'm like, okay, like am I done? Like, really? can I be done now? Because I'm really tired of this. But that's not life. That's not how life works, right? Because the more resilient you become, the more you can handle. You know, there's that saying, you know, God, Jesus, Buddha, Allah, you know, whoever you is your person that you, right. you pray to, they only give us what we can handle, right? And I believe that. But there's a problem with that scenario, because when you can handle it, you're going to get more. And because I just really believe that as, you know, we're all spiritual beings that are connected, and that's what we want in life, because when you develop that resilience muscle, because I feel like it's like a muscle and you build it. And the more resilience that you develop, the happier you are, and you can handle other things as they come along. And it just makes for a better life, a happier life, a more joyful life. But having said all of that, Michelle, I've experienced two bouts of depression, which the first one hit me in January of 2023, following my first bout of COVID. Okay. And I didn't understand it, because I've never been depressed in my whole life. And then I started seeing things that depression is a long haul COVID symptom. So I got better, you know, it lasted a few months. I pulled myself out of it. And then I got COVID again in January of 2024, and depression hit me again. Well, this time, because of some life circumstances that happened, in addition to just that, I hit such a bottom that I've never experienced before in my life. Okay. And I'm fine now, because I've worked through it, and, you know, and did, you know, I've got a big toolbox, like I know what to do. But let me just tell you, you know, we don't need to dive into that. But I felt that stigma that I never, and now I understand it, because I didn't want to tell anybody. I didn't even want to tell my husband. There's still people in my life that don't know how low I felt. And it was just a rude awakening. Like, oh my gosh, this is what people go through. You don't want to tell anybody. The shame.
And you even had kind of quote unquote a reason, COVID, right? You had like, oh, it's right. COVID. I had COVID. That's why.
It's because of COVID. Yeah. Right.
For a lot of people, they don't have that. It's like, where did this come from, or what caused this, or am I just not being strong enough, or whatever else? But yeah.
Well, yeah, because, you know, I'm at a point in my life where everything is amazing. I literally have nothing to be depressed about, in air quotes, right? And that's what really blew my mind, was that how is this happening? There's nothing. My marriage is amazing. You know, my ex-husband and I, we're like brother and sister. You know, I take care of my mom. She's in assisted living. She's doing great. You know, like my son's doing, like everything is good. And it just blew my mind at how dare you be depressed, right? Like it was kind of like you start thinking about, and you know, it like I said, it's all good now, but why is that happening? Like, is there a psychological reason why we're depressed, and then we beat the freaking shit out of ourselves, right? Like we start beating ourselves up because it's of the stigma. Why is that?
Isn't it fascinating? Even as mental health professionals, it's like, it doesn't make sense, right?
It doesn't make sense.
So, but I think there's a lot about COVID we don't know in terms of the short and long-term sequelae. So I think that's kind of a big black box we're still trying to sort out. And then what continues perpetuates that judgment we have about ourselves in terms of why can't I just get over it? Or why would I give myself permission to have the physical symptoms of COVID, but not the mental health ones, you know, or that I go through an episode of breast cancer, but I'm okay to tell my friends and family about that. And they send me postcards and casseroles and stuff like that. But then I go through an episode of mania or psychosis or depression or whatever else, and no one talks to me. I don't tell them because I'm afraid they're going to judge me. It's entrenched in our society. It absolutely
is. I mean, when you think about it, Michelle, for me to come out and say that I was, you know, I've gone through two bouts of depression and I host a happiness podcast, right? Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, do I need to just hang up the happiness podcast and not do it anymore because I'm a fraud? Like literally, like you just start. But then it's like, okay, I'm human. Yes, I have a happiness podcast, and I have a happiness podcast for a reason, because not only do I need to talk to people such as yourself and ask questions, but everybody else needs it as well.
Absolutely. And frankly, the other point I was going to make was the whole concept of post-traumatic growth, that going through major depression or trauma or things like that. Not that that's ever good, of course. I'm not being Pollyanna, but it's like, I can think of my own personal life experiences when things have really hit bottom or had traumatic experiences. Like, whoa, have I grown through that? Have I had deep empathy for people who are struggling or hurting? So for you, though, you've never experienced major depression before and you've had two bouts of it now, it's like, wow. Not that you didn't know before cognitively, but you know now at a heart and gut level, it's like, oh, what that's like. And having
gratitude
for your own mental health and well-being and ability to empathize maybe a different way than you did before. So I really believe in the concept of post-traumatic growth.
Yeah, for sure. And I say this all the time, almost every single episode, that we need to get to a point when these things happen where you realize that it happens for you, not to you. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful for going through this. Okay. And I tell you, you know, I work with a coach and she literally was like, okay, you need to take the rest of the year off.
Oh.
Now, granted, that was the end in November. Okay. So, but as a high performer, right? As a high performer, and I saw one of my girlfriends, she's like, Sandy, you're a thoroughbred racehorse that's been stuck in a stall. I'm like, I know. Like that's how it was for me.
Yeah.
Because for me to take the month of December off was probably the hardest thing I've ever done. Because it's very hard for me to just sit and be. I got really good at a lot of games on my phone and probably spent too much money buying the app, you know. But I did it and it was really, really good. It was probably the best month. I didn't accomplish pretty much nothing. I didn't do any. I was just being and learning how to just be and not filling my days up with meaningless stuff. You know, it's not great for business. But you know what? That's okay. I'll catch up, right?
What a challenge that your coach gave you. Wow. And for a doer, that's really hard.
It was very, very difficult. It was, I did what had to be done. Like there's, Sure. But it was hard, you know, it was really hard.
We can kind of so easily, I think, especially as women, define ourselves by our productivity, by things that we do and check the box, like this many podcasts, like this many articles, whatever else. It's like, well, hold on. Can we continue to grow in our appreciation of who we are without focusing on what we do or what we accomplish? So sounds like a really growth-filled month. So good for you. And now you're back in the January. Did your own first podcast in the last week. So that's awesome.
I can laugh about it now because really, you know, I try to look at things like that, like instead of like making everything so dramatic, if you can just like put some humor to it and take a step back and look at it and be like, oh, that's funny. Look what happened now, right? Isn't that hysterical, right? Yeah. Like, you know, and you can look back on it and be like, okay, yeah, I get it. You know, this was a little nudge to like wake up and, you know, like really put things in perspective and take care of the most important person in your life, which is you.
Humor is a great resilience factor. It's not one of my personal strengths, I will say, but it is a great, everyone's different, right? In terms of what works for them, in terms of their own resilience. So humor, service, volunteering, connection. But I mean, to me, when we look at, I mean, they're saying it's an epidemic, the Surgeon General, and I fully agree, of loneliness and disconnection. And so how can we continue to walk through the challenges, the traumas, the joys, and share that with others in community? I think it's just, I just think it's huge. I think it's so important as we continue to promote wellness in ourselves and those that we love. And there are ways, you know, I mean, you ask about, you know, what are ways in addition to kind of traditional counseling and things like that. There are all sorts of ways of connecting, be it through, you know, volunteering sort of stuff. Some people find churches or houses of worship of places. Some people find working with elderly, with children, with pets, Humane Society. I mean, there are all sorts of ways. Volunteering with mental health organizations, through churches, through schools, whatever else. I mean, there are always people that can benefit from us. Or whatever interests you, you know, whatever floats your boat, there's a way to get involved and connect. But getting away from our media, our scrolling, our phones, getting away from our computers, getting out of our houses, and connecting, I just think is a huge resilience stock. I really do.
Oh, for sure. And you just reminded me, because I went off on a tangent, but I was wanted to talk a little bit about service, in that what I found when I was starting to come out of it was just, I was like, because I didn't leave the house a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Now, part of it's because it's cold, but part of it's because I just didn't want to leave the house.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, okay, just go to the grocery store. And I went to the grocery store, and there were a couple of moments, you know, where you see the elderly woman and you look at them. And I just remember, like, looking at this elderly woman. I was like, hello, how are you today? And she just had the, and it was like nobody had even recognized her in weeks. And she finally had somebody just that simple act of kindness, when you make eye contact with somebody and you smile and you ask them how they're doing. And you know what? And I did that a couple of times just in the grocery store. And I came back home and I felt so good. And I was like, that's what's been missing in my life, is getting so caught up with everything going on that I need to, you know, just getting out of your own way and helping somebody else and doing something of service, as little as it may be. As you know, you don't have to like devote 3 days a week or hours a week to volunteering, but even if you just do one day a month or just something where you're forgetting about everything you have going on in your own life, put it all aside and really, you know, take a day or a few hours to help someone else, because that right there, it's like compounding interest.
So I couldn't agree more. And I love the idea of a structure and then the schedule and things like that. That's great. And like you said, sometimes it's spontaneous. You couldn't anticipate that there was going to be a woman who could really use Sandy's love and smile and brightness. You know, just talking to the mail carrier sort of person, you know, the person who manages to, you know, packs your bags at the grocery store. I mean, all these little things. There are opportunities around us. It's, do we look for them? Do we find them? You know, do we lean into them, or are we too focused on our phone, on our list, and all the stuff we have to do? You know, how can we look around? Because you know what? There's a lot of hurt out there.
There really is.
And I think, what is it that Leo Buscaglia quotes? Never estimate the power of, what is it, of a smile, a friendly word. I think, I don't know, I have that little quote. Do you know the quote I'm referring to? The Leo Buscaglia one? I think it's so true, is that we can make a difference in small ways that we never know the impact of them.
That's right. That's right. So, Michelle, this has been such a great conversation, and I talked a lot more than I normally would with one of my guests. The floor is yours. What would you like to share? Is there anything else? You know, just take it away.
Well, this is
I'm giving you a few minutes. If there's anything else you want to share that we haven't touched on that you'd like to focus on, please go ahead.
Well, Sandy, thank you. First of all, you're such a wonderful interviewer. Oh my gosh, you make it really relaxed and comfortable. So thank you so much. And for sharing. I mean, I really appreciate your own vulnerability and disclosure. That's part of what breaks stigma, okay, is people sharing their own stories. So I just want to hand it to you for what you're doing and all that you're doing. I want to speak to your listeners who also love someone with mental illness, because that can be a challenging role. And the research shows, right, increased depression and anxiety and loneliness and all those things, and loving someone who is struggling. And so I just want, you know, my whole mission is that they have been neglected too long, these family members and friends, including the kids. And so I just continue to do my shout out to, we need societally, you know, policy-wise, funding, organizations to see them, to honor them, to hear them, to support them, and to, as I mentioned earlier, you know, develop and implement programs that help them so they do feel, they feel seen. I mean, they're often giving 365, you know, 7 days a week care that is unpaid. They're not trained. You know, the mental health system, although is good, there are a lot of gaps, a lot of holes, difficulty accessing care and things like that. And so it falls on family members who can be very overwhelmed doing their own, trying to manage their own lives, other family members, kids, and things like that. So this is a lot. I dedicate a lot of my practice to supporting people who have some of the mental illness. And it's hard. It's difficult. And so I just want, speaking to your listeners, to reach out to places like NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or DBSA, Depression by Port Alliance. Reach out. There are resources. You're not alone. And if they might find our book helpful, you know, for the teens or for the adults, our website is Seeds with an S, seedsofhopebooks.com, www.seedsofhopebooks.com. Just, we have some free resources on that website too. For example, there's a resource on helping veteran parents talk to their kids about PTSD. You know, what do you say when something has happened, and how do you deal with the kid's reaction, and how do you talk about it and not? So in addition to our books, there's some free resources on there as well. So just continue to want to honor and raise awareness of the experience of family members, including kids who live with mental illness, that you're not alone and help is available for you.
Exactly. Exactly. And seedsofhopebooks.com will also be in the show notes.
Awesome.
Along
you.
With your social media links. Excellent. And I also just want to throw out there, because the past 2 years when I've gone through this, I did seek out therapy, which I hadn't done in over 20 years. Uh-huh. And I want to just throw it out to people, because that's a stigma too for people, like walking into an office building and seeing other people. Who am I going to run into? Nowadays, what I'm finding is that a lot of these mental health centers are doing only video appointments, because it saves everybody time. And so you can be in the privacy of your own home and do a video call, and you can have the therapy that you need. I had a therapist last year, and I only worked with her for 3 months. And at the end, I was like, I think I'm done. And she goes, Sandy, that's my goal, is I want you to graduate from us. And I was like kind of sad, because I really liked her. And I was like, but I just didn't really need it anymore. Right. We dealt with what I needed to deal with, and it was time to move on. But a lot of people, I think they don't realize that, because COVID helped us in so many ways in that. Now, you know, just on my podcast alone, I mean, I connect with people all over the world.
Yes.
And we can do that very easily. And the same is true for mental health. So a lot of the mental health has moved to 100% online. They accept insurance payments.
I'm 100% online. And before COVID, I've done none online, but now I'm 100%.
Right.
And the good news is, not only is there high patient acceptability and that they like it, not everyone, of course, but most people like it, but the research is showing it's just as effective. So you're not
absolutely
anything. It works just as well. You can form that relationship and connection and all of that. It's fun. You see people's dogs. Sometimes you see people's children traipsing through, you know, it's like, clearly you need privacy, obviously. But it's something, seeing people in their own homes can also be another way of getting to know them. And so, yes, absolutely. It's a great way of overcoming stuff. You don't have to drive, deal with the weather, the roads. Sometimes childcare may be less of an issue. It's a great thing. And I fully agree that tends to be pretty available for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I'm a big supporter.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. All right, Michelle, this has been amazing. Thank you for the work that you're doing, for the books that you write, for the resources that you provide people. We need this in our world today. So thank you so much.
Sandy, thank you so much. And again, thank you for all that you do in creating opportunities for people to hear your voice of hope, your voice of happiness, and other people you dialogue with. So truly appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michelle. And everyone, take care, and I hope that you and your family are happy and healthy, and that your lives are filled with peace, joy, and lots of love. Take care, everyone.